Ethan, it's time for another episode of the podcast, but unfortunately not live this time.
Hey, it was really fun though, and I hope we can do it again sometime.
Yes, true. All right, another week of biathlon in the books. Last, or I guess the end of the second trimester, going into world champs. A little bit of a break going on here. Yeah, Anholtz. Saw some interesting stuff out there on the range. I think it might have been due to the altitude. What do you think?
I think so too. I was, you know, Anholtz always, you know, always seems like it's a little shaken up from the previous pattern of racing and results. And I think I was going to say, like, the altitude definitely plays a huge part in that. And I think that's kind of what we saw as a trend for the weekend.
Yeah, a lot of athletes were mentioning that they just felt uneasy coming into the range this week. And that could have contributed to some poor shooting performances that we'll dive into in a minute. But, yeah, I just kind of think it's interesting when we have high altitude races like this that you see some people rise to the top, and those people are maybe the ones who have a little bit more genetic advantage, maybe someone with a higher VO max. And I'm thinking someone like Martin Ponsaloma, a little bit, you know, I guess I say the not so much of a secret that he has a really high VO2 max, which basically means his body is it's way more efficient with the amount of oxygen that it's able to take in. And sure enough, he had a great week this weekend. So, yeah, just kind of interesting to see. Yeah, when we come to these high altitude venues, the people who have a little bit more genetic advantage rise to the top.
Yeah, and I think we see that too. Not just, you know, like they can ski a little faster and maintain a little faster speed on the tracks, but when they come into the range, they can afford to shoot a few seconds sooner and feel a little more comfortable with, you know, like how tired they are, how heavy they're breathing. And I think especially for some of those athletes that live and train at high altitudes in the summer, like Dorothea Veer from Italy, her home venue, her home race. I know a lot of the French and Austrians also train at high altitudes in the summer and live at high altitudes when they go home for Christmas. I think we always see some of those athletes kind of take a step up just because they are that little more comfortable with that feeling you get of racing at high altitude when you come in to shoot.
Yeah. Well, let's just go into our first shot then, because you already brought up Dorothea Veer. Doro winning the sprint, and she just continues to blow my mind because she, like, I don't know. I really thought she was going to be sort of aging out of the biathlon scene, and not maybe the Italian team, because I know they're still young and inexperienced, so I thought, you know, she'd still be racing on the Italian team. But she's continuing to make herself known against everyone on every team. I mean, she's currently ranked fourth overall. She's 32 years old, and right when I least expect her to do well, she comes back and continues to win.
It's honestly kind of crazy. Like, you know, she's one of the older, she's in amongst the older generation now on the World Cup, and it seems like every year she finds a way to win a few races that, you know, you wouldn't expect her to win looking at, you know, like her ski speed especially. But she always shoots really well, and she always shoots really fast, and that's what got her the win in the sprint.
Yeah, it's really incredible looking at the stats from the sprint. So the top three on the podium were Doro, Chloe Chevalier from France, and Elvira Oyberg from Sweden. All three of those ladies shot clean. And when looking at the course times, meaning the ski times, Elvira and Doro actually skied about the same. And Chloe Chevalier actually skied 3 seconds faster than Doro. But like you said, Doro won it on the range. She was 8 seconds faster than Elvira on the range and 4.6 seconds faster than Chloe, which gave her that win. And it's kind of crazy because I think so far this year, most, if not all, I haven't been paying that close attention, but most of the results that we've seen have come from someone either out skiing or just simply out shooting in terms of hits. I think this might be the first race this year where we've seen someone win the race based on shooting time alone.
And it's always, it feels kind of fresh and new because we don't always see this in biathlon where someone wins a race by shooting faster than someone. You know, people shoot better, ski faster, but I think the shooting time and shooting speed is something in biathlon that is not necessarily underrated, but maybe almost underappreciated. Because if you know you're like Doro, you're a few seconds slower on the skis, but you know you can pull back 3 to 4 seconds every shooting in a race. And then if it's a 20-shot race, then that's possibly up to 15 to 20 seconds just gained back on the range. And if you're comfortable doing that, having trained like that in the summer and fall every year for however many years she's been doing biathlon, this is where you start to see it pay off. And it's really fun to watch.
Yeah. And I mean, to clarify, you know, if you're a young athlete or maybe a master's athlete back at home and you're hearing this, she still shot clean. So she didn't just go, you know, throw everything against the wall and win it that way. Like, she still hit the target. So it's a very delicate balance between shooting fast and making sure you're still hitting the targets. I think Doro is probably, maybe besides Simone Ader, it would be interesting to see those two go head to head. But in terms of shooting on the World Cup, hands down, Doro is the best female out there when it comes to hitting the target and hitting the target fast. Hands down, it's Doro. And she's really made a name for herself in that regard in the last couple of years. And yeah, it's just really cool to see, or interesting to see, that was what ended up making the difference in this sprint race. So yeah, really cool. Just goes to show you, you know, like, I guess kind of to build on what you were saying, you know, at the highest level, at the World Cup level, that 3 seconds per shooting stage or 15 seconds per race or so, that is a big difference on the World Cup. You know, maybe at your local club race, you're trying to save 3 seconds per shooting stage, you might end up adding, you know, close to 30 to a minute of penalties. So it's just something to play around with, something to consider if you're, you know, racing more at a local level. But really cool to see Doro, yeah, win that way. All right. Unfortunately, we got a miss here, and this is kind of similar to the miss that we had last week. But this week, it's Ingrid Landmark Tandervold from Norway. She dropped 5 places in the standings by coming in 52nd in the sprint. And unfortunately, she shot 0-4. So she still made the pursuit, which was better than what Jacqueline and Vitozzi were able to do in, where was it, Ruhpolding last week. So, or maybe it was at Pokluk, I don't remember. But she was still able to make the pursuit, and she did end up coming back in the pursuit to earn a few World Cup points. But with that 52nd place in the sprint, she dropped pretty significantly in the standings. Just tough to see. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this hurts a little extra because a few weeks ago we were talking about some of our most underappreciated, underrated athletes, and I chose Tandervold. And here she comes with a less than ideal weekend, to say the least. But I will give her props for moving up in the pursuit. You know, it's not like she went out there and just tried to get to the finish line. She, you know, made it to the start line, kind of regrouped and was able to move up enough to get some World Cup points. And I think for a lot of athletes on the World Cup, going from 52nd to 38th would be a pretty good pursuit day. And, you know, you hate to see it, but, you know, it happens and, you know, just got to move on.
I mean, what a terrible time to also have your worst races of the season. Not that she was necessarily a contender for the overall. At least I never really kind of considered her a contender. I mean, unless something amazing happened towards the end of the year. So I don't think she was necessarily fighting for the overall. But she was definitely fighting to be that guiding athlete on the Norwegian team, you know, since Marta Olsbu was out. But she shoots clean in the sprint and prone, and then has 4 misses standing. And then she does 90% in prone in the pursuit with 3 misses in the standing. So this weekend, her standing shooting was 53% going into world championships. Should she be worried?
I think she should, because not only did she struggle in the sprint and pursuit, but in the relay, she had no spare rounds needed in prone, and then ended up having to do two penalty loops in standing. And I think that might put her at jeopardy to be the anchor leg at World Champs, and might possibly kind of knock her out of maybe the mixed or single mixed relays. But I think she's shown that she can compete with the rest of the world, you know, in previous races this year. And, you know, she just had a bad weekend, and I hope that she can get over it before World Champs. And I wonder if it was just the way she races, being at altitude, going as hard as she does all the time. Maybe she was able to hold on for the first part of the races in prone, and by the time it got to standing, she was just so gassed, she just could not pull it together on the range. And so maybe at a little bit lower altitude in Oberhof, she can get those standing targets.
Yeah, and it's tough to have a weekend like this going into a two-week break, into the lead-up to the biggest races of the season. You know, we kind of talked about this with Jacqueline last time, of how he was just sort of probably brooding his terrible results for the, you know, time that he had off from the World Cup. I'm hopeful that Tandervold is a mature enough athlete to sort of write it off, you know, just take it with a grain of salt, just say, hey, you know, got all the bad shooting out of the way in the lead up to the, you know, into the lead up to the games. She's obviously been proving she's been much better than this season. I'm just hopeful that she can regroup, maybe hit the range a little bit in that time off and come back stronger than ever. Here's an interesting question. I wonder, could this have anything to do with Marta Olsby-Roysland's return to the team? Because in the beginning of the season, when Roysland wasn't on the team, Tandervold was a rock. She was like, you know, maybe not as good as Eckhoff and Roysland were last year, but you could almost guarantee she was going to be in the top 10 every race, and she even had a few podiums on the World Cup before Roysland returned. Now that Roysland's back, I wonder, do you think there's a power dynamic, power struggle going on in the Norwegian team, maybe even a subtle one? Could there be a, who's top dog sort of stress within the Norwegian camp, and maybe that got to Tandervold a little bit?
I think there very well could be. And I wonder if Tandervold kind of, you know, like, since Roysland wasn't racing, she kind of stepped up into this position, and now she's kind of automatically knocked back down just because Roysland's there, and how Roysland has raced the past few years has been at a higher level than Tandervold, I think is safe to say. So I think it very well could be that Roysland is back. And I also wonder if she's feeling the pressure to perform up to her standard to help that Norwegian team, you know, that's kind of not as star-filled as it has been in previous years. It's kind of race up to Roysland's level and elevate that team, that Norwegian team. And I wonder if that's kind of messing with her head a little bit too.
Yeah. So in the first trimester, Tandervold shot 90%, including a 98% in prone. That's crazy. This trimester, she's shooting 77% and specifically 62% in standing. So, you know, it's tough to say without being there. I don't want to just, you know, blatantly just say that there's some power struggle and, you know, talk about stuff I don't know, but I know, could be curious. I would be curious if that could be the case. You know, there's always subtle competition even between teammates, and maybe, you know, in an effort to prove herself that she is the top dog still and this is her team, maybe there was some sort of subconscious sort of like, hey, even though March is back, I still want to perform at a super high level. And maybe that just put 1% extra pressure on herself. And that was enough to, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. So hopefully, like we said, hopefully she can come back. Because, I mean, they worked super well together in, what was it, Ruhpolding, when the Norwegian women won the relay. So when they're together, combined with their other strong teammates, Norway is really strong. So hopefully, yeah, hopefully she can come back and yeah, do well for Norway at World Champs. But that was just a really tough trimester for Tannerbold there.
And we know that she's super close friends with Tyrell Eichhoff, and maybe not having Eichhoff there at this point in the season is kind of, you know, not necessarily helping her. Maybe she misses Eichhoff on the World Cup, always being around and having that person you can always turn to or look to when you need some support or like make you laugh a little bit more. So maybe she's just missing Tyrell Eichhoff too.
Yeah, could be.
Like the rest of us.
Yeah. All right, let's flip over to the men's side now. Johannes Tingesbo. Ethan, a couple podcasts ago, I asked the question, is biathlon getting boring? And I want to completely flip my sentiment on that. I am now 100% on the Johannes Tingesbo train because we are witnessing history. Mm-hmm. And I want to see how far this man can go.
Mm-hmm. I think we all do. And if you don't, I think you need to take a good long look in the mirror and appreciate what he's doing, because what he's doing is incredible. And it's not like every win and every podium he's getting, he's like just sneaking on there. It's like they're no doubters. He's winning by 45 plus seconds every single race.
Hmm. Yeah. So I have a YouTube video coming out soon, and it's in the works. It's requiring a lot of planning because I got to go back and do a lot of statistics. But I am trying to determine who is the GOAT of biathlon, the greatest of all time. And, you know, right off the top, many people will say, you know, Oleander Bjørndalen. Mm-hmm. Many people will be fighting for Martin Fourcade. But I want to statistically go back and try to figure out who actually is the GOAT. And in my research, with some help of some, you know, folks on Twitter who've been also doing their own research, Johannes Tingesbo this season is making history. Yeah, you're right. He's crushing everyone on the trails. Mm-hmm. Right now, he has 11 wins and 13 podiums in 14 races. So his winning percentage right now is 78%, and his podium percentage is 92%. So he's podiumed in every race except for one. Mm-hmm. If he keeps this pace up, he is going to surpass Fourcade, who had 22 podiums in 2014. He's going to have 23 at the end of the season, so he's going to surpass Fourcade. And he's going to smash his own record of 16 wins in 2019 if he keeps this pace and he earns 19 wins. So right now it's almost seeming like even if he cools off the slightest bit, he's probably going to smash his win record just for how dominant he's being. Maybe he'll lose a few in the, you know, individuals, or maybe he'll have a weird, bad, untimely shooting in a pursuit race or something where someone might sneak ahead of him. But at this pace, he is so far ahead of pace for the wins. It really is impressive to see. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of like rooting, like, how much can he beat everyone by? Like, I want to see, can he win by a minute? Can he win by a minute and a half, 2 minutes? Like, where is his level?
Yeah, I think I want to see that too. Like, how many misses can he afford and still ski his way to the win? And it's not like he's racing against, you know, bums or anyone out there. Like, he's racing against the best athletes in the world. And these are some of the best athletes we've also seen in history. Like, for example, Liegrid is on pace for 19 podiums this season, which would put him third all time, just three podiums behind Fourcade. And that's just crazy to me that he's setting all these could be setting all these records and has this crazy success rate. But he's also competing against someone who is potentially having the third best season of all time too. And I wonder if they're just pushing each other to a whole nother level. And I'm honestly already looking forward to what we're going to see next year from the Norwegian team. Not going to lie.
Next year already?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. It is funny. Like, just completely erase Bo. Liegrid is putting together a historic season in his own right. Mm-hmm. And to consider the fact that he's doing that, in a season where you can really, you're fighting for two spots, you know, like the podium is three spots, but Liegrid is fighting for two of them because Bo has just become a guarantee that he's going to get one of them. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Liegrid is fighting and making history himself is, in its own sense, it's just absolutely incredible. But yeah, I kind of agree. See, I'm a little bit of the opposite way. I want to see Bo shoot clean fast, and I want to see him put together the absolute most perfect biathlon race. Like at World Champs in the individual, if he can go 20 for 20 and ski, like out ski everyone by, you know, minutes as he's doing, I want to see, like, he could win the race by 2.5-3 minutes even. And I don't know, I'll have to go back and do some research to see last time someone won a race by that much, but I just want to see him put together the perfect biathlon race, because that will be, in my opinion, the perfect cherry on top to a perfect season.
Mm-hmm. That would be incredible to see, because I feel like he always has, you know, one or two mistakes, you know, where he'll miss, like, every mass start, it seems like, or pursuit, it seems like he's missed, like, three targets this year. And that's nowhere near perfect for the standard he's setting himself in terms of wins and success. And, you know, this is all these, like, numbers and stats also kind of makes me think about that one race in Le Grand Bonnat where anyone on Fisher skis just could not ski for the life of them. And seeing him go from, you know, having that kind of race and how he looked in that race to the, you know, like zooming out and seeing the full picture of this season is just kind of crazy, the kinds of things that can happen in biathlon. Just like the way the season can go and how the sport is in its nature can produce something that looked as bad as that in Le Grand Bonnat, and then something that is possibly the best we've ever seen in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it truly is amazing. And if you're not rooting for history here, I don't know, you should reconsider your biathlon. I like what you said. Take a long look in the mirror. All right, let's go on. We got World Championships coming up, and I'm sure we'll probably talk more about Bo in a minute. But let's go back to the ladies' side. World Championship starts February 8th with the mixed relay. Who are your predictions to dominate, and who are your predictions to be a surprise, whether good or bad?
Are we talking just that first mixed relay or the whole World Champs as a whole?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, the whole mixed relay. The whole World Championships.
Okay. The whole World Championships. See, it's at home for Germans, which is a huge monumental point in the season for any German biathlete. And anyone that's watched races at Oberhof or has potentially been to Oberhof knows that those fans are crazy, and those races are always some of the best in the entire year to watch. I think a lot of athletes are going to have their sights set on on this World Champs, and for someone to dominate on the women's side, I'm actually going to pick Elvira Oiberg, because she got her first few wins a few weeks ago. She's kind of just been missing that, you know, like those top few positions consistently. And we talked about how she's somehow, we have no idea how, somehow beating Julia Simon in almost every statistical stat in biathlon, but finds herself almost 80 points back in the overall. And I think she pulls it together and just absolutely crushes everyone in most of the races at World Champs.
Now, it's actually interesting you said that, because I'm now going back and I'm realizing Elvira Oiberg, yes, while she was, we were talking about how is she statistically better. I think she actually should technically be ranked first right now, but because she was sick and she missed the Roop Holding mass start.
Mm-hmm.
Like how far back is she? Let's see. yeah, what is that? Like, yeah, 80 points or
mm-hmm.
yeah, 80 points. So yeah. Okay. If she, you know, if she raced that race, I mean, Julia Simone did race that race. So even if she raced that race and came on the podium and got like 60 points, I guess, okay. So maybe technically she wouldn't be in first,
mm-hmm.
but she would be much closer than 80 points.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think Elvira and Julia are much closer to each other than they should be. That's an interesting analysis. I agree with you. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Elvira did sort of come alive after not necessarily being a flop to start the season, but she just didn't seem like she was like there, even though mm-hmm. she's always been ranked in the top three ever since the season has started. She just never seemed like she was there. And I don't know. It took her a while mm-hmm. to get her first podium and then eventually her first win. But since the Christmas break, her shooting has skyrocketed. I mean, mm-hmm. let's go. I'm going to see what her shooting did this trimester, because it seemed like she couldn't hit the broadside of a barn in trimester one, and now she's shooting way better. Yeah. So this trimester, oh, man, 95% on the range, where the first trimester she was shooting 89%. So that's actually kind of funny. I was kind of thinking she wasn't shooting very well in the first trimester, but she actually was. She was shooting basically 90%, which is really good, but she bumped that up to godlike. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, I don't know. Maybe I just, mm-hmm. I'm not, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I don't like Elvira Oiberg for some reason, but for some reason, I'm just, I just still don't feel super confident about her, but I felt way more confident about her this trimester.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a good one to see. I like everything you said about the crowd and everything, because so far the crowd has been absurd this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a little low in Contiolati when we started, but when we jumped over to Hochfilzen, it bumped up a little bit. And then ever since Le Grand Bernard, the crowd has been fire. And you know it's going to be great in Ruhpolding. This is going to be an awesome World Championships.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, I really want to say Denise Hermann. I think she's going to have that home field advantage, but
mm-hmm.
I unfortunately, and actually this is another idea for a YouTube video, home field disadvantage in biathlon. I wonder how people perform at home as opposed to on the road, because you have all the crowd following you.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this is a tough one. I want to give it to Julia Simone. I think she's been so confident and consistent this year. I just see her coming alive at World Champs. I just see her really shining when maybe other people, even if you crack under the pressure like 5%, you don't fully implode, but you crack 5%.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't even see Simone cracking that 5%. So I'm gonna have to go with Simone for the dominant female athlete of World Champs.
Okay. And who do you have for your surprise athlete?
Surprise, I'm going to go with Lynn Pearson.
Okay.
And sort of the same reason, I feel confident with her. I haven't really seen her implode this year, and maybe she has, and maybe I'm just biased. And I'm, you know, I want her to win, and yeah, maybe my bias is showing. But I don't know, I just feel like she's been on the cusp. She doesn't have a World Cup victory yet, so what better time to come alive at a race, you know, where
mm-hmm.
everything matters. She has a couple podiums this year, which is good, and I think this is going to be the time where she finally breaks that hump, because she's come in the top 10 so many times this year, and really hasn't had a really bad race. Like in Anholtz, she shot 90% in the sprint and came in 22nd. That's been her worst race of the year. But yeah, going back to like Ruhpolding, fourth in the mass start, Poke Luca, top 10s, Le Grand Bernard and Hochfilzen, top 10s. So maybe, yeah, going back down in altitude a little bit, back to a little bit more level of a playing field. And I think she's just going to have a good day on the right day.
Mm-hmm. I like that pick. I think for my surprise athlete, there's a lot of names I'm looking at when I'm scrolling through the top 30 on the World Cup, and looking at Roslyn down in 25th is kind of tempting to pick her, because I think, you know, she's been good since she came back, but she hasn't been the Roslyn we've seen of late, and I wonder if she'll come back and kind of surprise everyone. But I am actually going to go with a German for my surprise athlete. And I'm going to go with Sophia Schneider.
Ooh, okay.
I think she's had some really good races, but she hasn't quite had that final, you know, like good shooting in the last half of the race to solidify her good ski speed that she has.
That's a really interesting pick because she was skiing so well at the beginning of the year, and she has cooled off a little bit in the last trimester, but her shooting in the last trimester, I think, has kind of gone to shit. And so if she can, like you said, if she can like figure out the shooting and bring it back up to where she normally is, I think that's going to be a really good pick.
Yeah. I think as of now on the season, she's shooting 79%, which is a little less than the World Cup average. Whereas last year she was shooting 85%. And if she can get back to that at World Champs with her ski speed, that is, it's competitive with everyone that's usually in the top 10, top 15. Mm-hmm. I think she could have a pretty awesome world champs at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, her skiing is so far up this year compared to last year. She's like, I think at the beginning of the season too, she was skiing like competitive with Denise Herman. And yeah, oh my gosh. Last year compared to top 10 athletes, her skiing was 8.8% back. So way behind a top 10 athlete. Now she's 2% back, top 10 athlete. So you're right. She's right in there with top 10 skiing. So, yeah, that's going to be a sneaky one. The only thing I don't like about that and kind of what I just said is the home field disadvantage. She's young. She's only 25. This is her first, like, real season on the World Cup. I could see the excitement getting to her a little bit. But you know what? You know, takes pressure to create diamonds. Maybe maybe she's the one who thrives under the pressure. We just don't know yet because she's still so young and so new to the scene. Maybe she's the one who, when she's got everyone cheering for her, all of a sudden she throws down like a Lampich-esque ski time, shoots clean, and yeah, she's out of nowhere. That's a good pick. I like that one.
Thank you.
All right, let's do the same thing for the men. And I mean, we could, you know, who's going to dominate? It's going to be pretty easy to pick one person, but maybe we'll try to avoid that person. Let's just say, I do want to say something. I have another stat I pulled up.
Okay.
If Johannes Tingesbo cleans up and wins gold in all the individual events at World Championships, he's going to move into third all time for most World Championship wins and medals. And he will have the highest medal percentage. So, again, talking about history being made, that's something to watch. If he cleans up like he did at the Olympics last year, he will move up and actually pass Raphael Poré for World Championship wins and medals all time. So let's try to play this game. Who's going to dominate? Not named Johannes Tingesbo.
I like this idea of not being able to choose Johannes Tingesbo. I went first last time. Why don't you go first for this one?
All right. I don't like feeling my A. Sorry. I'm going to go Christensen because I'm feeling bullish on Christensen. He's been really strong this year. He's been riding high the last couple weeks, the last couple trimesters, couple second places in a row. So I like Christensen. I think his performance at the Olympics last year was really where he came alive. And he proved to me, at least, that he can keep his cool in extremely high-pressure situations. And I think that's what we're going to get in Oberhof. So I don't not like Liegrid. I like Christensen a little bit more.
I would be lying if I said that was not my pick. But I'm going to go with Benedikt Doll. I think he's one of the more experienced athletes in terms of races and time on the World Cup. And my rationale behind this is that he knows he's not going to win the overall or be competing with the overall. And so I think looking at the race calendar at the start of the year, even 2-3 years ago when they announced World Champs were going to be in Germany, I think he took his red marker and put a big circle around that week. on his calendar and is going to be as best form we've seen him in the past few years. And I think he has a few podiums. He elevates his shooting. We know he can ski fast, and we know if it comes down to a last lap, he's going to do absolutely everything he can to not get dropped or drop everyone else. My pick's Benedict Doll.
I like that one. I like that pick. I like cheering for Benny Doll. I mean, It's tough to look at him skiing because his technique is not the best. But, yeah, I think you said it best. He's a fighter. You know that if it's the last lap and you're tied with him or he's chasing you, get ready to fight because this dude's coming. And Overhoff is, after they actually redid the course, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. And since that redo or that new hill that they put in, it's a tough course. So even though it's not at altitude, you're probably going to see some of the faster skiers or like the more fit athletes gradually rise to the top. And Dole is definitely one of those guys. So I like that pick. All right, you go first for surprise.
Okay. For surprise. This is a little tougher on the men's side, I think. There's a lot of names that we've seen good things from, but not consistently. And that is what's kind of tripping me up when I'm looking at some of these people. But I am actually going to go with a Swiss athlete, and I'm going to go with Sebastian Stadler.
Stalder.
I think he's 25 years old, so he's pretty young. And we've seen some pretty exciting races from him this year. And let me look at his stats, pull him up. He is skiing, you know, decently fast. He's only 3.6% back from the top 10, which isn't terrible. You know, he can work with that if he shoots clean. But the reason I chose Stalder is because of his shooting percentage. He is shooting 91.3% for the season. And in an individual or one of the other four shooting races, hitting your targets is going to come in pretty handy. And I think he might surprise some people with a few races.
That's an interesting pick. That's going to be a real surprise. I think if you put some money down on that one, you'd be walking away with quite a bit of cash if that one paid out. I don't think it's a bad pick, though. I mean, he has been just from, you know, I have been observing that he's been getting a little bit more TV time in the last couple of weeks. And it's probably, because he's on a little bit of a high right now. And I did not realize how good he was shooting this year. So if he can do that 93%, if he's shooting 93%, then he's probably going to be in the mix in the individual. If he can, you know, get over that hump and get to that 100, 20 for 20 in the individual. We saw his countrymate, Nicholas Hartveig, do that in the season opener. In Contiolati and was on the podium. So there's no reason that Stadler can't do it. And this is the other great thing about having, like, all you need is one teammate to show that it's possible, right? Like Hartveig did it. And maybe that was a little bit of a fluke, but he was able to come back and still produce really good results and keep it in the top, 15 now. He's currently ranked 12. Maybe Stadler is like, yo, what the heck? I've been training with Hartveig all year. He's currently like a top 10-esque athlete. There's no reason I can do that. And suddenly Stadler is on a high. So who else is on their team? They got, Weissner is getting a little bit old. So is Finello. So Burkhalter is young. Maybe he can have some good results as well. So I think Stadler's a good pick for a one-off surprise medal, and maybe the Swiss, if they can all have a good day at the right day, maybe they could have a good relay as well.
Yeah, and especially in one of the mixed relays or single mixed relays, when you throw in some of the women there that are also having great seasons, that can be exciting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, my pick for surprise. I was looking at a few athletes here. I'm going to go with Vytautas Strolia.
Okay.
From Lithuania. I think I was looking at his results last year. He's riding high right now. He's 30 years old. He's been on the World Cup for many seasons. And slowly but surely, he's been making his way towards the front of the group, just year over year, just consistently has been rising. And so far, it doesn't look like he's peaked, he's maxed out yet. He is a little bit, he's on a little bit of a lull compared to last year. But looking at his Olympics last year, he was riding really high going into the Olympics, and then just kind of gassed out a little bit, burnt out a little bit. His skiing dropped, his shooting percentage dropped at the Olympics. So I think Strolia is coming for blood. He wants revenge on the Olympics. And this year, his skiing percentage is amongst, well, I guess his skiing percentage is the best he's had in his career. So he's back up. He's a high. Went down a little bit this trimester, but in general, his skiing is up over his entire career. His shooting percentage is up over his entire career, up to 87%. I think Strolia is going to be a surprise medalist at World Championships.
Mm-hmm. I like that pick. He's always someone I find myself, you know, rooting for and hoping he does well. So I hope he does well too.
Yeah. All right, spare round. Let's end this. North American with the best chance at a medal in at World Championships can be men or women. Who you got?
This is tough, but I think I have to go with Emma Lunder in the individual particularly.
Mm-hmm.
I think none of the other Americans have, or North Americans have kind of shown that ability to throw down and get it close to that top 10, you know, consistently as far as Emma Lunder has. And you know she's going to shoot really well, and her ski speed is competitive. So I would put my money on Emma Lunder in the individual.
Yeah, I want to go Emma Lunder as well, but for the sake of shaking it up. I really wanted to go like Adam Runnels, someone just like really random. But I think I'm going to go with Campbell Wright. Okay. Now, I don't know if that counts because technically he races for New Zealand. However, he does have an American passport and has American citizenship. Mm-hmm. And he did say on Chad Salmlo's podcast recently that next year he will be transitioning over to the American team. So I'm going to put in a little asterisk next to that one, but I'm going to go with Campbell Wright. Now, I feel much stronger that, Emma Lunder has a much stronger chance of this happening, but I'm feeling good about Campbell Wright. I think he's just got the perfect mindset for it. He's on a high right now. He did very well in the last couple of races, skiing specifically. His shooting let him down, but he still had good results considering. So I think if he can put it all together on the right day, I think we could see Campbell Wright come out of nowhere miraculously.
I like that pick. Not sure if it totally counts, but I like it.
Okay, well, so here's the question now.
Yes.
The only American to ever win a world championship, or I guess win a biathlon race on the world stage, is Lowell with his world championship.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a couple second places like Susan's and I think Jay Hakkinen might have a world championship medal. Tim Burke has one. If Campbell does get a medal at World Championships, do we put him up there as one of the greatest Americans in history of biathlon, or does he still have to wear the stars and stripes to be considered a great American?
I think we can consider him an American. I think he said he's going to race for the U.S. in the future, and he's still relatively young. I don't know how old he is.
He's 21, so he's still a junior.
Okay. I did not know he was still a junior. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's coming to Junior Worlds this year as well.
Okay. I think he'll have plenty of opportunities to, you know, race really well in that U.S. suit with the U.S. flag, and I think we can count him as an American.
All right. Let's first, he's got to win the medal, then we can have this debate.
That's a good point. That's a good point. We'll circle back.
We'll circle back in a couple of weeks after he wins the medal.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, that's all we got this week, folks. Hit that like button if you enjoyed this this episode. Leave a comment down below to join the conversation. And yeah, tune in. We're going to take a couple weeks off just as the World Cup is off, as we lead up to World Championships. But yeah, we'll be back after that first week of racing at World Championships. And yeah, you can get this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, including Google, Apple, Spotify, or if you enjoy seeing our faces and looking at pictures, you can also watch it on YouTube, where I add some graphics and stuff. So yeah, wherever you get your podcasts, this is where that podcast is. So like, subscribe, do all the stuff, and we'll see you next time.